is up. It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Thomas Blottenberger. Thomas is a CFP, a CHFC, an ABFP, and the co-founder of Paradigm Shift Financial. We had an awesome episode that started with two truths and a lie. We moved on to talking about the importance of and the challenge of having the right perspective on our life, our work, situations, how it's so easy to get stuck, what it takes to up-level, what it takes to create new and beneficial patterns and habits, how it's so important to question what our current version of reality is, and how to gain a sense of control that we're moving in the right direction. We close with a great difference-making tip, super practical, on how to optimize your cash flow and your spending to get to where you want to go with your money. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Thomas, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
All right, George, let's see. I grew up in California. I've run a marathon and completed without training. And my grandmother was the 21st of 21 children.
The 20th of 21 kids?
The 21st of 21 kids.
Oh.
Maybe.
Potentially. All right. Those are really good. You were born in California. You ran a mile without training for it. And grandma was potentially the 21st of 21 children. My goodness. Well, California, why not? Running a mile without training? Foolish, but maybe. Grandma, they had more kids back then. I'm going to say that you weren't born in California, Thomas.
No, oh, you got me. Ah, you got the lie. How awesome.
So tell me about the mile or the marathon.
The marathon, yeah. It was November of 2011. I was in Hawaii. I'm from Hawaii. That's where I was born. The Blottenberger name doesn't really give it away that I'm from Hawaii. But there you have it. It was November 2011. And I thought, what the hell? I should probably try to run a marathon. Like that's something I haven't done. Why not? And, the next one available was December, a month away. And I went, all right, I'll give it a shot. See what happens.
Yeah.
And I completed, but it wasn't pretty. And I've never run since.
No, like at all. What was going on in November of 2011, Thomas? Existential crises, breakup.
No, no,
none of my business.
I think what was going on in 2011. So it was when I started to discover. I've been in like self-discovery and transformational work, like, you know, the kind of work that requires you to think about how you think. Mm-hmm. I've been in that for about 15 years. And that was probably the first year I'd really discovered it. And I don't know. I think, well, here's what I would say about it. What I used to be, and I think most people deal with this, is my thinking was the truth. And I was trapped in it. And there wasn't any possibility. And life was a struggle. And life was difficult. And I had this discovery of, I'm the one who makes it mean that. I'm the one who's responsible for that. And I think that newfound discovery was just like, I can do anything. Why not take on a marathon? Let's go. Now, I will say my discovery out of that is there is still being prudent. You can do anything. And prudency wins the day when it relates to surviving things. I did survive that, but very difficult.
Yeah. Sometimes discretion, the better part of valor, right?
Yeah.
Prudence. Okay. I love everything about that story. I think it's awesome. I'm like, well, you know what? I need to really rethink my thinking. And what if the opposite of what I believe is true? And I can do anything, including run a marathon without even training for it. And you were right.
Yeah.
There you go. Awesome. And grandma was in fact the 21st of 21 kids. That is amazing. Would she, where did this happen and why?
Yeah, that was also in Hawaii.
Okay.
So my mom's side, which is the grandmother on my mom's side, paternal grandmother, we go back six generations on the island.
Wow.
Portuguese. But my dad's pretty much all German, so that's why my face looks the way it does and my name looks the way it does. But yeah, no, I guess maybe island fever. She didn't really have much to do, my grandmother. I don't know, or my great grandmother. I don't know. Yeah. I can't even fathom it today. I have one and I go, whoa.
Yeah, it's a lot for yeah. Sure. Wow. Well, that's a whole nother podcast episode. So I love it. That's a job well done on two truths and a lie, Thomas. What is top of mind for you right now?
What is literally, well, there's a lot of things that are top of mind, but what's literally top of mind was when I was listening to some of the other shows is some of your most recent guests I've actually met.
Small world.
Yeah. I was looking through it. I'm like, it was Lane from Hawaii. And then Chad, I met him at an event in 2017. I was like, oh, all right. So yeah, George has got some good people on here based on you know, confirmation bias.
Yeah, for sure. he's a smart guy.
Right. other than that, just, you know, my mind's really been on just the events in the world and mainly observing people. And observing myself and just noticing how much uncertainty there is just in general, right? I would assert that there's a higher level of uncertainty that exists right now than I think most of us are used to, right? It's almost palpable. But then also realizing life is literally uncertain, right? And it's really how we deal with that uncertainty. I think Chad on your other podcast pointed to a little bit, right? The mindset. And so that's really what's been there for me is doing the looking at what's it take. So given that life is uncertain, given that everything is a question mark for the most part, what does it look like to be empowered by that versus at the effect of and disempowered by it? And I don't know that there's an answer to that. I think sometimes the most powerful thing we can do in life is to have a question that's not answered. Just kind of look through it.
Do you think that we do well with that?
It's not normal. It's not the programming of being human. Humans as a machine are really powerful, really functional for particularly surviving. And so you look at one of the main things that the brain is predominantly really good at doing. It's really good at taking new processes and then automating them via your subconscious. You know, take a kid learning how to walk and then watching them stumble and figure it out. And all of a sudden they're running. Boom. They don't have to think about it anymore. It's subconscious. Driving. Right. I remember when I first learned to drive and I did a parallel park and I totally took out the bumper of the car I was I was parallel parking next to. Right. Now I can do it pretty much without thinking about it. Yeah, so the brain is phenomenal for those kind of things. It's not really great at questioning itself. That actually takes some kind of that takes intentional fatiguing effort. And I think there's a lot of value in doing it because a lot of times what we think is the truth is just a story. And it's just something we've made up or our version of reality. And if I'm not really willing to question my version of reality, I don't ever have access to discovering things that might be more powerful.
There's a lot of important stuff there. I think that I certainly follow a lot of predictable patterns and habits. I like routines. I like to do things. And talking about learning how to walk, learning how to talk, we're sort of constantly, for lack of a better term, up leveling, and we understand how to do something, and then we're able to execute that, and that's comfortable. And then all of a sudden you've got a job and you've got bills and you've got kids and obligations. And so it makes it more difficult to keep up leveling.
Yep. Well, it's also that there's a, it explains why there's people that have a lot of things and still aren't happy. It also explains that, because like what I picture is, you know, the first time I started dating my wife, and just what that experience, that newness, that experience, right? The discovery. And then what can tend to happen is it becomes routine, right? It's from, wow, this woman's amazing. Look how, who is this person? Who is she? What to, oh, that's my wife. Right. And it almost becomes like a given. And so when we say things, you know, this is part of the, I think, the problem with the world and part of the problem with coaching, let's call it, is we like to say, people will say cliches like don't take things for granted. And it's like, well, cool, but where's my access to that? How do I just randomly stop taking things for granted? Like, what cool story, cool concept. How do I apply it? And one of the ways I see to apply it, this could be the tip, right? But one of the ways I see to apply it is notice in your life how many routines you have, how often you go to subconscious. And if it's something that's actually important to you, like your kids or your marriage or your business, take the purposeful effort to bring it back to the conscious. Take the purposeful effort to bring it back to the newness, to the discovery, to the aliveness, to the uncertainty. And there's power in that. There it can be where you can recreate your loved ones every single day just by, you know, discovering them newly.
I love that. It is very common of us to grow accustomed to things, and things can become monotonous. I certainly like novelty as much as the next person, and newness. But you're saying that it's possible with effort, the right framing or thinking, to recreate that.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. It is effort, because the brain is a machine. If you look at the brain science, it's not designed to do that. It's designed to predict the future using past events. It's designed to automate routines, and it's designed to survive. And while phenomenal for what it's designed to do, most of us don't need to survive anymore. Most humans have more than they need. And yet, because of the design of the brain, we're still surviving everything. And so that's why you see the 24/7 news cycles and people freaking out about who's going to be president and people freaking out about what to do with their accounts. And it's just normal human stuff, or even, you know, the social unrest of certain things. When we have more today than the richest person alive 300 years ago, right? The average person has more creature comforts than the richest person 300 years ago. And yet the way the brain is designed doesn't let us be happy, because it's got to find something to survive, because it's programmed that way. And it actually takes some effort to bust that.
I agree. I was thinking about how you take a lion, you put the lion in the zoo, and they sort of get that glazed over look because it defies their nature and they're not happy. And we are, I don't know what we're designed to do. I don't think that we're designed to sit in a cubicle and do TPS reports for 8 hours a day and just do that and then do fantasy football at nighttime and watch Netflix and then repeat and repeat and repeat. But our brain does like to keep us alive. So it's giving us that just consistency, even though it's against our nature.
No. Well, even in the mundane, there's a way to find power and purpose in it. You know, there's a I don't know the truth of this because I haven't verified it, but there's a story that when Kennedy made the claim that we were going to put a man on the moon and NASA was putting all of its effort into that, that someone asked a janitor at NASA, you know, what are you guys doing? What do you do? And he said, I'm putting a man on the moon. Right. And so he could have just said, I'm a janitor. He could have just said, I'm just cleaning up stuff. But he bought his role in the mission, put a man on the moon. And so we all, there's always things that we, you know, people have to do. There's jobs that for someone to be a CEO, someone has to be willing to take a secretary position or a worker mm-hmm. position, or someone has to be willing to do that. But the action of doing that doesn't have to define your experience of it.
It's one of my favorite stories, for sure. I think that the way you look at something makes all the difference, for sure. And we get to choose that. I get to choose how I view and think about and feel all the circumstances of my life. And I think a lot of people call bullshit on that. Like, I'm just a secretary or whatever, I'm digging ditches.
Yeah.
But it's a choice, and it needs to be a conscious one, to your point, not unconscious.
Well, and then what you just said is perfect. Like, why would someone call bullshit on that? If you really do the looking, right? Why would someone call bullshit? And again, this isn't an assessment or a judgment of the person. It's just an awareness of how the mind works. So taking responsibility, like actually owning, I am here in my life as a function, where I'm standing in my life as a function of my actions and my actions alone. The things I chose to do, the things I didn't choose to do, the conversations I chose to have, the conversations I didn't choose to have. It's anti-survival to be responsible for what your life looks like. It's very much so survival and natural and normal to go, well, I'm just a secretary because XYZ. I'm just here because my parents did this, because my wife said this, because of, you know, and it's not wrong or bad. There's just no power. And most people live life with no power.
It's a locus of control, my belief in my ability to impact the world that I'm the water I'm swimming in or whatever.
Yeah. And this isn't, I want to be clear, this isn't like some frou-frou, like fuzzy, touchy-feely conversation in regards to like, oh, just think good thoughts and life will like magically be sunshine and rainbows, right? It's not that. It's about what gives you the most power. And to deal with life, because life's going to happen. Things go crazy, right? there are circumstances beyond your control. And it's foolish to think that you could control some of the circumstances. But what gives me power is who I am in it, right? What are my choices in it? How did my choices get me here, right? What can I be responsible for in it so that I see actions I could take differently? If it's always someone else's fault, there's no actions I need to take. So if there's no actions I need to take, I'll just keep repeating the past with different people or different scenarios, and it'll always be someone else's fault. That happens a lot with money and finances. You know, I'll talk to people who have had their seventh advisor, and it's like, you know, I'll be the seventh person they're interviewing. And we'll deal with that. Like, well, what happened in the past? Oh, well, this person gambled with my money. Okay, well, then what happened with this person? Oh, well, this person lost all my money. Oh, what happened with this person? Well, this person embezzled it. All right, well, what happened with this person? Well, this person, you know, didn't make me anything, but didn't lose me anything either. It was just flat. And he goes, well, how much, you know, the question that comes to mind in that kind of a conversation is, well, how much did you try to learn about this stuff? And they'll say, well, I just trusted them. Well, there you go. There is your locus of responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. So
there's so many things, and that's probably, do you think that, I think that right now, I know that society is telling us that there are a lot of things that are forces impacting us. But do you think that that's a biological or hardwired thing in us to say, this is why I'm here, instead of saying, how am I going to get out of here?
Can you expand upon that a little when you're saying like, how do I get out of here? Or
yeah, it's like, why somebody told me years ago, they said people argue for their limitations. So why am I here? Because, you know, because I was abused as a child. Horrible. But you're going to spend your life as a victim versus you're going to spend your life as a survivor.
Yep. Okay. I get what you're asking there. Well, again, it's all brain science. It's just the condition of a human, the default position is surviving life. And nothing allows for survival more than someone else being responsible for why it looks the way that it is. Because then, you know, you got to get, well, you don't have to get, but it's an opportunity to get, right? How risky it actually is, how much risk you have to take to be willing to say, this is my fault. How, like, because there's so much behind that, right? Well, if it's my fault, I'm a failure. I'm, you know, I didn't do it right. I messed up. And it's all things we're kind of like taught to shove under and not really admit or acknowledge, right? It's besides the fact that it's kind of a human condition to survive. There's no evidence of this as far as I don't have a claim or a study or this is just anecdotal, but I noticed like if someone tells the truth as a kid and then they're punished, what would that reinforce? Mm. Well, that would reinforce not telling the truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when I tell the truth, when I say what's actually there for me to say, things go bad. I get punished. So I got to pretend it's all okay, or I got to not say what's actually there, or I got to blame someone else.
Incentives. And then the abdication of responsibility, somebody else's fault. My default is keep myself alive and just staying in the shallow water. Then that's where I'm going to stay. And
it's safe, but it's not alive.
Not at all.
Yeah. And it's safe, but it's not an adventure. You know, being willing to, you know, I've broken my business more times than I can count at this point. You know, I was in the industry as a certified financial planner and a insurance guy, predominantly selling permanent insurance policies. And then I discovered, some of the investing things that we were doing didn't really make sense. They seemed like they were gambling with people's money, and I couldn't explain them to clients. I was just told that I should do those things. And when I discovered that what I was doing wasn't working and discovered like, oh no, there's actually economic science to how you invest. Like given that markets are driven by supply and demand, there's an economic formula and science to a lot of this stuff that if I just adhere to with my investing, it's particularly and specifically with my capital markets, like stock markets, life goes really nice over a long period of time, but we're not taught that as practitioners. So I learned that and I brought that to my old firm and they were like, shh. They're like, dude,
if
people learn to not be worried about the markets, they won't buy the insurance stuff.
Mm.
Like, so what are you doing? Be quiet. And I'm like, oh, we're the bad guys. All right. Awesome. Good to know. I had no idea. And I left a high six figure revenue to start this business with nothing, right? Zero. And then I had a business partner until the beginning of this year, and she was my best friend, and it wasn't working, and it hadn't been working for years, but I'd avoided the conversation because I didn't want to damage the friendship. And I know there's tons of people out there that are experiencing things like that. They've got businesses that aren't working because of relationships that they got that don't want to hurt. They've got marriages that aren't working because of relationships they got that are just not being honest about what's there, right? It's too risky. And I ended up being honest. It finally, you know, was time to say what there was to say, and we split. And we're not friends anymore at this particular moment. I have a commitment and a hope that gets repaired, but at this moment, that's not reciprocated, and that's okay. That's life. I mean, I'm alive as a function of embracing the risk. And then right now, I'm looking at breaking it again because I'm a financial planner. But the conversation you and I are having right now about life and about the difference that can be made for people in discovering this kind of, inquiry, in addition to managing their money, this is really what, this is what gives me the juice. Like, this gets me up in the morning. And I don't know what that looks like, because I've been a planner for 15 years. But, you know, if you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to shake it up, that's where the life really gets lived. That's been my experience of it. It's inside of that I've had the most opportunity to really just get present to, wow, shit's great. Like,
shit is great for sure.
Thank you for allowing me that my tirade there.
1,000%. You know, I appreciate your thoughtfulness and everything you're talking about, and also your predicament, for lack of a better term, because you had success in a challenging industry and had developed a practice doing something that you knew how to do, sort of like the conversation from earlier. You sort of level up, yep. And okay, now I know how to do this, but I'm going to break the thing because it's no longer satisfying or bringing me the joy that I'm looking for out of my career and my life. And I've only got one crack at this deal. So there's no better time than now to reassess.
Yep. I couldn't say it better. I guess the only other thing there that I'm noticing is either you break it or someone else will break it for you. Like, there is no, especially in today's world, this is one of the things I love about capitalism and free markets, or at least free-ish markets, is someone's always trying to come up with a better version of what you got. And if the moment you get comfortable is usually the moment you lose the battle.
Face forward, or face the possibility of extinction. Like, that was from Mallrats, Thomas. Remember Mallrats? It's a pretty good one.
I remember, I think I saw that in a museum about that. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, for sure. 1,000% is a historical artifact at this point, for sure. So,
and pointing this back real quick, just, what does all this have to do with finances and money? Well, what it has to do with is, this is why most people are never happy, even when they make more money, when they get more stuff, when they have more resources, when they have multiple businesses. You know, there's that momentary, I've made it. This is, I've got that car. Ooh, wow. I never thought I'd be able to get it. I got that business. I got that property. And there's that momentary, and then inevitably it loses its newness. It becomes routine. And then it doesn't bring joy anymore. And in most instances, it just becomes something else to compare against.
Well said, brother. Well, we're going to have a difference making tip. So you've already given us a lot of things to chew on and think about, but we're ready for the difference making tip. Thomas, what do you have for us?
All right. So this works really well for, I actually have a tool that we use to automate this, but this works well for pretty much anybody across the board, whether you're making a ton of money and killing it, or you're, paycheck to paycheck. One of the biggest brain hacks that you can do is, if you look at how most people flow their income, most people flow their income into a bucket that they've been conditioned for years, probably since the beginning of their experience with money, is to spend money. That they put money into a checking account, it gets spent. They put money into a checking account, it gets spent. And sometimes they save some of that. And what that usually leaves people with is one of two things, just as a function of human nature. It either leaves people hoarding money, guilty when they spend it, or it leaves people spending all their money, regretting they didn't save some of it. And usually you'll find most people on either side of those that pendulum at varying degrees of extremity, right? So the easiest way to solve that problem, the easiest way to deal with that, is to trick the brain by separating out the container that receives the income from the container that spends the income. Actually have it where all cash flows flow into a bucket that you don't have any kind of spending from. No mortgage, no lifestyle, no nothing. And then from there, you control the flow into a checking account that pays the mortgage, pays the expenses, pays for lifestyle. Because what's automatically happening in doing that, first off, is you're automatically saving money, right? So if I have a pay raise of 10%, I don't go, oh, where did that go? Because I already captured it right off the bat. Secondly, is you can actually create guilt-free spending out of that. Now it's not a, oh, I shouldn't have spent that. It's a, oh, I moved the money into this account specifically to spend it. So it's okay that I spent it. I actually designed it that way. And it's probably one of the most powerful brain hacks I've ever seen. And it's really missing in the cash flow conversation.
Well, I think that that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on. You know, sometimes the simplest answer is in fact the best one. And simply changing the container to which your paycheck flows into, and then what you do with it after that. Those are simple, probably free things you can do, and it could make all the difference. So I love it. Well, Thomas, I've enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for coming on. How can people learn more about you? Where can they engage with you?
That's awesome. Well, it's been really great being here with you too, by the way. Thank you. And, you pointed out one of my LinkedIns isn't working correctly. So the one they should, if they want to look me up, they can look me up on LinkedIn under Thomas Blottenberger, my name. And then the website that I have that tells a little bit more about the story is paradigmshift.adxleader.com. And ADX stands for American Dream Experience Leader, which is something we didn't get to.
Something to talk about next time,
Something
Thomas.
To talk about next time.
I love it. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Thomas your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Find Thomas Blottenberger on LinkedIn and then go to paradigmshift.adxleader.com and dig deeper into the world of all things Thomas. I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Thomas.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.